Welcome to the What Dreamers Do podcast. I'm your host, Carla Gover, an Appalachian musician, flatfoot dancer, mama, creative, and dreamer from Kentucky. I'm on a mission to inspire others to realize their dreams and live their most creative lives. Grab you a mason jar full of sweet tea or something a little stronger and pull up a chair, because it's time to get your dream on. Who's been following you? Because that's what dreamers do. Howdy, howdy. Before we get started today, I had a couple of announcements for you. One is that I want to let you know about a new resource I have. It is an ebook, and it's called How to Live Your Most Creative Life. And it features tips and stories from 15 guests from this podcast, both past and future. And it's designed to help you get past creative blocks, get your juices flowing when you're busy or you're overwhelmed, and you just want to infuse a little bit of creativity into your day or into your life. This is what some of my guests and the artists that I talk to and the creatives that I talk to do in their own lives, and I think you're going to find it really valuable. If you'd like to get your free copy, all you have to do is go to my website, www.carlagover.com/creativity. I will also link it in the show notes here. And while I've got you here, if you enjoy listening to this podcast, I would love to ask you for a small favor. There are three ways that you could really help me out. One is simply to leave a review on Apple Podcasts. That helps boost me in the algorithms. It helps me get heard by more people. And since I don't have sponsors or deep pockets or any kind of fancy budget for this, those simple small gestures help me a lot. Also, just sharing it with a friend that you think would enjoy this episode or any other episodes, I would appreciate that very much. Or if you'd like to buy me a coffee or become a monthly supporter, I will link to it in the show notes, and you can also access it at ko-fi/Carla Gover. If you could do any one of those three things, it would mean the world to me, and I really appreciate your support. Meanwhile, let's get to our interview with my wise and wonderful guest. Hello, dreamers, and welcome to this week's episode of What Dreamers Do. I am so excited to be here with my friend and mentor, Deepshikha Sairam. She is a divine feminine priestess and spiritual mentor to high-achieving women, entrepreneurs, and leaders. I first learned about Deepshikha via her podcast, How to Woman. Am I saying that right? How to Women, How to Woman?
Mm-hmm.
And then I worked with her as she was my business mentor for the past 6 months or so. And one of the reasons that I wanted to learn from her initially was her spiritual approach to business. And just during the time that I've been working with her, I have watched her transform into less business, more spiritual. So we're going to talk about that transformation and many other things today. So welcome, Dee. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us here today.
Thank you so much for having me. I am so excited and thrilled to be here.
Well, and I have to let you know that thus far, the podcast is pretty Kentucky-centric. So you're the only person who isn't living or closely associated with Kentucky that I've interviewed, but you're just so cool. And I think you have so many good offerings that I know my listeners will love you. And I had to invite you.
Oh, I feel so honored with that. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think it just means that you have to come and visit us in Kentucky at some point.
For sure. And I was just thinking that, you know, I think of myself as a starseed, and I'm pretty sure I've been everywhere. So I'm pretty sure in some dimension, some timeline, I've also been in Kentucky, but I would love to visit.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I think we should just dive right in. And so I referenced it already, but you have been going through quite a transformation lately, I think, and I feel we have a lot to talk about, but it would probably be good for my listeners if we start just with some background, like maybe a little Cliff Notes version of your life and your journey to where you are right now.
Ooh, okay. All right. So let me see if I can put all of that in a Cliff Note word. So I was born and brought up in India. I moved to the United States when I was 25 years old. I was married. I moved because of my husband's job here. And when I came here, I quit my job and I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to write a novel. I wanted to write a fiction book. And that fiction book never got completely written, but I got pregnant with my older one and then 4 years later with my younger one. So I was a stay-at-home mom for about 5 to 6 years. And at that point of time, I started to feel this void in my life. I started to feel this craving for my own personal and my financial identity. However, there was a problem. I knew that I wanted to pursue something in the creative field, but the model of what that looked like was not in front of me. I was raised by, women who were very creative, who were highly creative. Like my mom was an artist and she was multi-passionate. However, back in their days, they were made to choose. They could either follow their dream, which was very, very rare, or they could raise a family, and they always chose the latter. I mean, I don't even think that the choice was available to them. And for me, I didn't want that choice because I wanted it both, and I wanted it all. I've always wanted it all. Like even like, you know, I tell my husband, like, no, I'm not going to choose. I want it all. So I decided to start my own business at that point of time. Didn't know what I was getting into, didn't know what is it that I wanted to do, but I did know that I had this longing to, do something in the creative field, but also to have a name for myself. I wanted people to know me by my name. And funny enough, I started as an Instagram marketer. Like I did kind of social media marketing, and that transformed into business mentorship. And over the last 2 years, I've had this kind of like a transformation. I've lived through, my dark night of the soul, and everything in my life, I feel like came down to this one moment where I had to really face the truth of who I really was. And I've been a very spiritual person ever since I was very little. I didn't know this at that time, but I have had multiple spiritual awakenings. Probably it's when I was as young as 3 months old. Also when I was 7 years old, and I have glimpses of it, and they all make sense now. But of course, at that point of time, it didn't make sense. I didn't even talk about all of that because it was just, it wasn't even encouraged. There was no conversation about, being a spiritual person and having these vivid remembrance and vivid dreams and lucid dreams. But over the last couple of years, it was pretty clear to me that I had to follow this path, and not just under the garb of business strategy or, something else, but truly own my deeply spiritual nature and my deeply priestess nature. So that's where the pivot happened. That's where I finally decided, which was very hard. It was very, it was like come to Jesus moment for me, that I had to make that choice because there was really a fork in the road for me. That's why I decided to become a spiritual guide, spiritual teacher, and a mentor. And I know that this journey hasn't stopped. It's going to continue to evolve. And I think that's the delicious part of it. We never stop our evolution. We continue to evolve. We continue to transform into something else. But I think that's like probably the fastest version of where I've been and where I am now.
Yeah, that's a lot to pack in. And you did a great job of condensing it all. And it's clear from what you're describing that this is much more than the COVID pivot that so many people had to go through, to transform or change their business, to adapt to a changing world. It's deeper than that. It sounds like it's something that's been coming for a long time.
Oh, absolutely. It definitely wasn't a COVID pivot. In fact, I was on a podcast, a couple of weeks ago, and they asked me, like, why did you decide to change? Because I was top of my game. It wasn't like, the business wasn't making money, or, we had losses due to COVID. I was top of my game when I decided to make the pivot. And I think that's what was the hardest part, is to how to let go of something that you're so good at. That this can turn into something else, but there is almost like a door there, which is the truth, and I think many of us face these decisions to follow our soul or to follow, the proven path, the path that has always been there in front of us. And I love writing. I love reading, and, there were two roads, and I took the path that was less traveled by, the road less traveled. That's been my journey all my entire life. I've always taken the road less traveled.
Well, I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage to do what you did in terms of, if I may say so, coming out of the closet as a spiritual leader, because that, I feel like that is one of the things that can potentially make you the most vulnerable to scrutiny. Because people are looking, then you're saying, oh, she's saying she's a spiritual mentor and guide and priestess even. Yeah. And I really admire you for coming out on that and heeding your soul's call. Was that scary for you? I imagine it was.
Well, yeah, it's like I'm saying, Carla, it's been a long journey. It wasn't something that people saw maybe one day that I decided that, oh, I'm not a business mentor and now I'm a spiritual mentor. But the courage to get there has taken years and years and years for me. And it was definitely scary. I think it was the last year or so, I was totally in indecision. I knew, I would say October 2019, so even before the pandemic, that this was very apparent to me, that this was the direction that I wanted to go. And I kind of like, you know, try to play both sides and try to do the work and try to, you know, not come out of the spiritual closet, but still like do the work behind the scenes. But I'm a very black and white person. I can't really hide myself. It's like it was stifling. It was like I was killing my soul. I wasn't happy doing that. And I think the moment when I decided that I am not going to, I'm going to come out and say that I'm a spiritual, mentor, leader, teacher, and a priestess, it was very scary. And I am absolutely aware that I'm sure there are people out there who still, like, you know, have me under scrutiny or, talk about it that, oh, like, how did she decide? Like, one day and like now she's a spiritual teacher. But I think all of that is on one side, and then this true call to your soul is on the other side. And the path is a scary path. I don't know, like, you know, if I look back, I feel like I had no choice. I had to do it.
Well, and I think that's common in anybody that heeds the call of spirit, whether it's to be a full-time artist or to be a spiritual person. And I guess one other layer of it that we're dealing with in this time that we're living in is the fact that a lot of the ways that we're connecting with people is online. Mm-hmm. And you have this extra level of, I don't know if it's work or just, you have to get past that facade of everybody presenting things in this perfect way online to be able to make true connections. And you can, you know, I met you online and I feel like we've had a true connection and it's meant a lot to me. But I think that's another layer of it when you're, you know, you're not only doing the work that you do, embarking on this path as a spiritual mentor, but then you're navigating the online world and the social media and all that.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, that's been harder for me because now I feel like, you know, it's a very interesting thing that you said, because I think you'll agree with me that we're all plugged into the matrix, right? We're all plugged into this 3D version. And once you get a taste of what that unplugging looks like, once the veil lifts and you can see the truth, and you can see beyond the ego, beyond the identities, beyond this character that we have created for ourselves, then you see the truth, right? So, you know, being in social media and now being aware, I used to get very triggered by a lot of things on social media and people and, you know, supposedly my competitors. But now I can kind of like see the reality of everything. And it doesn't trigger me as much because I see that everybody's just playing a role. Everybody's playing a character. You know, inside they have their soul, they have their higher self that's there. It's not gone, but outside we all have to play this identity, this role, this character. So, you know, the first few months, even I would say last month, it was so hard for me to be in the 3D world. there have been times when I had to completely disconnect because I could not relate to anybody or anyone. But that's the game that we played. You know, we are all these souls who have taken a contract to be on this earth. And it's not about, you know, staying in the fifth dimension and being here and staying in that higher octave. It's about maintaining that higher octave in the 3D world. And that's how we will change the world, right? That's how we bring the new consciousness on earth. It's not about me staying in my cave and meditating all day long and saying, as long as I am peaceful, that's fine. It's about me becoming peace and becoming joy and becoming creative. And then, you know, then emergence starts to happen. If I can be me and then I can impact one person and then two people and then three people, that's how we will bring the new consciousness on earth. And I know we're going in a completely different direction than we decided to. But yes, like, you know, this being in social media has been pretty hard for me ever since I decided to decide that I can step out of my character anytime I want.
Yeah, I love all that. And I talked in recent episodes of this podcast about the importance of staying plugged into that, to use your metaphor of staying plugged into those higher aspects of ourself and bringing that energy to the earth. Because mm-hmm. for me, that's just such a way of feeling empowered in the face of the dark and despair inducing things that are happening around us right now, to remember that we can be part of the solution. And so right. I really resonate with what you're saying from that respect. And it reminded me of this metaphor that I've always had in my head for that thing you're describing, how we're playing a role. So I don't know if growing up in India, Bugs Bunny cartoons were a big part of your culture. Mm-hmm. So there was this one Bugs Bunny that they played a lot where there's a sheepdog and a wolf. And the sheepdog's trying to guard the sheep. And the wolf is doing everything that he can to get the sheep, and they're mortal enemies. And then they blow the horn for quitting time and it's 5 p.m. and they just stop what they're doing and they stop their fighting and they both go and they clock out like with a little time clock and they're like, night Ralph, night Sam. And so their roles totally shift. The role that they've been playing totally shifts. And I know that's not related to the social media part of the conversation.
Right. But it is, you know, it is. Like, as long as we can remember this is a role that we are playing, and we don't become the role forever and forget who we really are at the core of it. And, you know, clock out of that whenever we need to, whenever we want to.
Well, the Stanley Brothers advertise for Martha White Flower, so I'm going to do a sort of cooking advertisement here to support this podcast. I have a confession to make. I love to cook from scratch, but many nights these days, I'm only cooking for my son and myself. When I'm busy and tired, sometimes it's a little bit too easy to get takeout. So I decided to try some of those meal kit boxes that I saw advertised, and I went through four different ones until I found the one that I like best, Home Chef. Every week, I get to pick four meals that I think my family would like, and they send the ingredients right to my door. This isn't processed food either. It's just healthy meats, fresh vegetables, and grains that I prepare. It usually takes me 30 minutes or less to get supper on the table, and my picky son loves every meal. Plus, it's way cheaper than takeout. If you want to try it out, just go to carlagover.com/supper. I don't get paid for this endorsement. I just truly like the product. And if you sign up using my link, they will send me credits toward my own boxes. And with an almost 13-year-old boy in the house, I could use them. Plus, all that good food is going to help me keep recording this podcast for you. Just do me a favor and don't tell Granny.
Well, maybe this is a good time to talk a little bit about the framework that you've been developing, which I think you call Path to Self-Mastery. I don't really have a clear understanding of what that is yet. And I know that my listeners would love to hear more of how you're conceiving of that.
Yeah. So just to give you a little bit of a background, I was just sitting around and listening to something. And you know, I get very visual downloads, and I got an infinity symbol downloaded to me, and I knew that it meant something to me, but I didn't know what it meant. And I spent, and this was back in I think December of 2020, and I didn't know, and I kind of like how we do, like we in the 3D matrix, we try to force things, we try to like make sense of things, and you know, make things happen as fast as we can. So I did all of that. I tried to make sense of the infinity infinity symbol and all of that, and then I realized sometime actually this December, January, while the Christmas break was happening, that this infinity symbol is what I was going through many, many years, especially in the last year. And I saw it as the path to, you know, mastering your own self. And I see it as infinity because this is a continuous process that we are on. And I saw that we go through different initiations at different point of time, right? So the first initiation that I see is the fire initiation. I'm sorry, the water initiation. And this is about getting rid of all that emotional gunk that's been in our body, right? So all the emotions that are there, that are survival-based emotions, like fear and shame and guilt and unworthiness, getting rid of that. And that requires us to look at some of the past events, because all those emotions are coming from past trauma and past events. That requires us to look at those events. And most of us are not doing that. We have kind of like, you know, subdued it, we have pressed it, we have pushed it under. So it's the process of letting go of that emotional body. And once you've done that, now you are in the air initiation. And this is, I call it the entire, this process as the void, as the unknown. And I felt like once, you know, things had started to happen in my life, and I had started to get realization that, you know, this is no longer how I want to live, and there's something else for me. I didn't know what that something else was. And now I was in the void. I was in the unknown now, right? I could not predict what's going to happen. So in my, let's say my past business as a business mentor, I could predict I'm going to do a launch. This is how much money it's going to generate. This is what content I'm going to put out. But once I decided that I don't want to do this, I didn't know what that next level was. I didn't know what the universe, the goddess was asking me to do. I was now in the unknown. So now, you know, once I started getting rid of my emotional body and started facing all the emotions and, you know, the trauma from the past, now I was suddenly in, I saw it as air. Like I saw it as like fog, forest, because now the emotions were kind of like leaving me. I was not no longer getting triggered by the same trauma. However, there was this voice inside my head, and I started to hear all these doubts that don't do this. You're going to break your career. And I'm just using my career as an example. We all go through this all the time. We go through this journey all the time. And that I thought was a really good opportunity for me to really rely on my intuition than the voice of my head, than the voice of my inner critic. Right. So I see that every stage comes with a shadow, and it comes with a gift. So the shadow of the first stage was, you know, fear and these emotions that were in my body. But the gift was transmutation of the emotions. The gift was turning them into creativity, turning them into creative power. And the second stage, I saw the shadow was my own inner critic, my own doubt. But the gift was really relying on my intuition. And I always get reminded of the fog, because I get reminded of the story of Baba Yaga and was it Vasilis, right? Baba Yaga and Vasilis, who, you know, she was in the forest and all she had was her doll to rely on as she found her way to Baba Yaga and also, you know, have a conversation and get what she wanted. So she didn't rely on logic or the voice of her head. She relied on her intuition. That doll was a symbol for her intuition. So once we get out of this, and I saw that most of us are always stuck in a cycle of fear and doubt. That's where we are all the time. We're stuck in that cycle. But once you pivot from there, now you can let go all the things that are not serving you, your shadows, the fear, and you can unbecome and come back to really who you are. So, and the next two stages are the fire, which is, you know, the death and rebirth. And the last one is earth, which is regeneration and unbecoming and wholeness. And then suddenly you see that, oh, there are so many possibilities. Like this is, we are in the quantum field now. We have access to infinite possibilities. So this entire process was not just given to me, Carla, but I think I've lived, not I think, I know that I've lived this process intensely. And when I say a path to self-mastery, I mean someone who is a master of self. So I'm going to give you an example. So yesterday was a hard day for me. A lot of people think that spiritual people don't react. Spiritual people don't have bad days. We do, right? I had a bad day yesterday. I was doubting myself. All the fears and all the monsters were there. However, what I had was an acute awareness of what I was doing. Most of all, mostly we are so unconscious. Of our unconscious thoughts. Like we don't even know we get in that pattern, right? So if the fear comes, if the doubt comes, we just keep following that. But I was aware of that. And so I was able to use the tools that now I have developed, and now they have become part of my literal neurology. I was able to use that and get back. Right. So even I was today in a meditation and I kept going to the fear, but I kept coming back to it. So I often, I have a puppy, Cleo. He's 9 months old now. And we've had the most difficult time training him because we were not serious. We would train him whenever we wanted to. We would train him whenever we didn't. Like, you know, we didn't have time. We would not train him. But once I decided that he's the animal, I'm the master, I am going to train him. I'm going to say sit and he should sit. I'm going to say come, he should come. That's when the game changed between him and me, right? That's when he started to listen. And that's the same relationship that we need to have with our body and our mind. So when our soul says, sit down and pay attention in the present moment, that's when our body and mind has to agree. It needs to come. So it's the game of becoming a master of your own self so that your soul is always leading you. Soul wants adventure. Soul gets really bored when things become predictable and things become boring. So that's the whole process of getting beyond yourself, your doubt, your critic, your fears, your past trauma, and always going towards mastering our own body and our mind.
I love it. I love it. I resonate so much with that. And especially, you know, the idea that while we're here on earth, even if we're spiritual people, we're never going to completely eliminate fear or doubt or those negative voices.
Right.
But it reminds me of one thing that my spiritual teacher says, which is that we learn to use those those thoughts as a trigger, as an alarm clock. Because the way he explained it to me is, you know, when you have that self-doubt or self-criticism, and it's a habitual one, it's worn a groove in your brain. You know, there's a neural pathway there.
Right.
And what you can do is, okay, there's already, that's already a groove. We're going to use that groove. And when you find yourself thinking that thought, then you pivot it to the thought that you want to replace it with. And you're using the erosion that's already there, the pathway you've already worn, to create the new pathway.
Absolutely.
Totally reminded me of what you were saying. So
yeah. And from a neuroscience perspective, that's exactly what's happening in the brain. So I've seen brain scans of people's brains changing. And that's exactly what happens. This new neural pathway that gets formed and the neurons start getting wired together. And it's amazing because our body, our brain is, plasticity. We can change it. And I think the people who are willing and committed to becoming masters of self, they are the ones who can really keep digging that groove that you're talking about so that the brain gets changed.
Well, it's really fascinating. I could talk about this stuff all day.
Same.
One thing I was wondering is, coming from India and with any region, I guess there are positive stereotypes and negative stereotypes, but, you know, for many of us in our consciousness, we associate India with this being this repository of deep spiritual wisdom and spiritual practices and holy people and gurus. So to what extent do you think your early life in that culture influenced your spirituality today? Is there some element where?
Yeah, right. Yeah, a lot. And there are definitely both aspects to it. Just like in any culture, there are things that you relate to, there are things that you don't relate to. And I think in India, and I would say it's in every culture, I'm just going to talk about India because I know the Indian culture so well. There's such deep wisdom, spiritual wisdom that, you know, I saw my grandmothers use in their daily life, my mom. However, the problem was that when it was passed on to them, there was no explanation of why we do the things that we do. Right. So, you know, I remember my mom using the chakras to, you know, balance your energy, and my grandmother using so many like manifestation techniques. And but it was never explained why that happened. And the only thing that they talked about was religion. Right. And to me, I poo-pooed that for a very long time, because there were some aspects of religion that I liked and there were some aspects of religion that I did not like. And it was funny because I was 13 years old when I first saw the goddess. She, like, she came to me and she would appear to me many times whenever I was in a problem. It was almost like whenever I had a problem, a question or anything, I could call upon her and she would come to me and we would have a chat. And for me, the entire idea of going to a temple every Tuesday to talk to God was so alien. I was like, what are these people doing? Don't they know that you can just talk whenever you want? And so, you know, I poo-pooed on that for a long time. However, now that I know the science behind it, and I know that, you know, there are a lot of people who've contributed so much to, you know, the explanation of, let's say, the chakras, the energy centers, you know, how the prana moves in our body, and other things as well. Now I get it. Now I understand it. And now I've kind of like embraced it, you know, within my own practices as well. But it did influence me a lot. We do follow some culture as well. However, I'm not for superstition. I'm not for you can't wear black on a Friday, or you can't cut nails on a Thursday. Like, I'm not for that. My belief is that God is everywhere, and I welcome and I love all God. Like, the other day I had Jesus in my meditation. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm so happy. So I'm all for all gods. The idea is, and I don't know how spiritual your audience is, but I know that the God is within us. Like, we are all divine. So once you understand that, once you really know that it's not something that outside you're talking to and outside you're praying to, it's someone who's inside you always. You know how there's a saying that people are looking for God, they can't find him. What's the best place to hide? Hide the God inside of all of us. So it did affect me a lot. And I feel like now, as I've reached the stage in my life where I'm embracing my spirituality even more, I've started to use much of that wisdom in my work as well.
Well, that made me think of something that I wanted to ask you, that it's just something I think about a lot. Of course, I feel similarly to you in that I grew up in a very spiritual and religious culture, and I gravitate toward the spiritual aspects of it and was not so much the religious and rigorous and superstitious aspects of it. But in the churches that I went to growing up, God was always depicted as masculine. And so I think partially because of that reason, when I think about the divine, I've been especially attracted to conceptualizing of feminine aspects of the divine, because I need that, you know, I need that as a sort of a role model for me to know that I can also contain it. But what do you think about this thing that we do as humans, where we have all these different, maybe are they overlays of God, these different flavors, these different ways that we all have, or at least for those of us who pursue a spiritual path or spiritual thought of thinking of the divine, where I've also heard other theologians say that, you know, the divine ultimately has no gender, no, you know, is more formless. What do you think about that? Why do we do that?
Oh, wow. That's such a loaded question. I think, you know, I honestly don't think I have the right answer. I can only tell you what I think. There is a lot of mythology attached to it. And again, like, I'm no expert in, you know, the religion, in the West. I can only talk about, you know, India, all the gods, and we have like at least 500 gods and goddesses. They all have this mythology behind it, but even then there's always a feminine aspect to it. And there's a masculine aspect to it. So for example, in India, Shiva is the masculine god and Shakti is the feminine god. Okay, so I'm going to talk about my experience, you know, what I know to be true. I know that we all have masculine energy and feminine energy, and there's this both energy, and we need both in our life. And even when we talk about the prana, we have two serpents, right? Like, you know, at the base of our spine, and they both have to unite in order for you to get the enlightenment, in order for you to see the light, really. So I do think that both are important. I think it's mythology combined with religion, combined with patriarchy, combined with superstition that has led to this division of duality, right? But there is no duality. It is all one. It is all one, and it works. It will work better. I don't even know if that's the right language that I should be using, but it will work for the highest good for everybody if we see it as one and not as dual. Yeah. So I do think that that there is gender, not in the terms of like, you know, how we see gender as, as male, female, binary, non-binary. I'm all for that. But isn't there like one of Hermetic laws, and I'm like, while I'm talking, I'm actually looking at is that there is gender in everything. That's one of the Hermetic principles. And what they're talking about is the energy, not the physical gender, but the energy of gender. There is a masculine energy and there is a feminine energy, but we need both in order to thrive.
Well, yes, that wasn't intended to be like a specific, I needed a definitive answer.
Right, of course. Yeah.
It's just something I find very interesting because I tend, when I'm conceiving of the divine, sometimes it'll have, you know, one particular goddess or a different god will come to me that day. And I'm always curious, well, you know, what is that? What does that mean? Why does it like that instead of just always experiencing the same energy that's just divine energy?
That is such an interesting thought. You know, I get the same thing. I have different, sometimes there would be, one God, sometimes there would be another God. And I've never thought about it, but I feel like maybe there is, and at the end of it, you know, if you rip apart everything about every religion, all religions say the same thing. They mean the same thing, right? They're saying the same thing at the end of it. Like if you take out all the priests and all the popes and everything and all the drama that comes with it, they all say the same thing. So I think when we are visited by a particular god or goddess, I think it's that energy that we're calling in. So for example, you know, today I had Kali come to me. And so I kind of knew that I needed the Kali energy, right? To liberate, to burn down, to, you know, that a little bit of a dark energy in me. So, you know, that's what I would assume that is. But that's such a good question. Yeah, I would definitely ponder on that a little bit more.
Yes. Well, you already touched on this a little bit, but I wanted to ask, while we're having this conversation, on this show, I talk a lot about my grandmother and the other female elders in my family that were very strong. And one thing that you and I have talked about that we have in common is that we both come from, you know, with you in India, me in Appalachia, a place that has a lot of really patriarchal tendencies, where there are many, many very strong women who wind up playing second fiddle to these patriarchal systems or ideas. So I'd like to hear anything you have to say about that, or just the strong women, how their strength came out in spite of those systems.
Patriarchy was very apparent in my household and in my family and in my culture. You can go work, but you also need to come back and then and be a wife and take the beatings, and you can't open your mouth. And I saw all of that around me. It was everywhere. It was, you know, even in the culture, even in the religion, it was everywhere. The patriarchy was everywhere, and women you can't do a lot of things. You can break out of the box, but you still have to be at the border. You know, you can't really shatter any glass ceilings. So that was always there for me. I have always been a very defiant, almost a rebel. And my mom had to play by the rules, but she was a very strong woman. And I think my strength really came from her. And even though she was playing by the rules, and she also didn't really understand herself how she was breaking the patriarchy, or even if she had the strength to do that. And I think in the end, she died young. And I think in the end, the stress and the trauma and everything got to her. But one thing that I always got from my mom was that we are no less than, we can do whatever we put our mind to. We have to take care of ourselves. Right. So they weren't actually a lot of examples of strong women in front of me. And of course, we can talk about it in a lot of detail as well with examples. But I always felt that was lacking. But to me, that somehow turned it as a fuel than pushing me down. I always saw that and I was like, why is that happening? And how can I make sure that that doesn't happen where I am? Yeah. And I mean, I'm a mom to two boys, and my husband was raised in a matriarchal family. He was raised by his grandmother, and he always, we're both on the same page on this, that we need to teach our boys to not play a role in the patriarchy at all.
I was going to say, you know, I think for me too, that was fuel. It was, gave me determination that I need to, even though I didn't call it that when I was a little girl, to smash the patriarchy. I knew I wanted to grow up and help smash the patriarchy so that I could have more freedom and more choices and more options in my life. And other women could too. But now that I'm raising a son, I realize that it's not only do I not want him to be a part of the oppression of women, but until we have a society that is not misogynistic, it hurts his full expression of his being because of what you were talking about. We all have that inner masculine, feminine. And if we live in a world where he can't express himself with colorful clothes or cry in front of a friend, he can't be his full self. So we have to do it for the women, but we're also doing it for the healing of the men and the boys.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, a lot of people think patriarchy is to do with, you know, raising the women and empowering women, but patriarchy affects men too. It does. You know, our men have grown in a culture where they were told that they can't cry, they can't show their emotions. Like, imagine the pressure on men that they have to be the one who needs to be the breadwinner. They have to take care of their entire family. And in India, that meant your parents, your grandparents, your entire family, like, you know, your sister, marry your sister, pay for the dowry and all of that. And men crumble from that. And it's not a healthy society. There is so much imbalance in that society where women are not given a chance to speak up and own who they are. And men are, you know, just told that they have so much pressure on them and they can't really emote how they feel. It just creates more separation. So I think we're seeing a change. We have to be the change that we want to see, right? So we are the people who can be the change. I feel like our generation, Carla, especially with my parents, even though they were kind of half here, half there. They had like both feet in two worlds. Like, they were working, they had the education, they kind of understood that. There was a little bit of, like, you know, knowledge around these issues. However, they grew up with that oppression. They grew up with, so much of that. And, you know, like in India, for example, there was no such thing as LGBTQ community. Like, you know, it was so foreign. Even like dating, like, that was not, you know, considered healthy. Or love marriages were not considered healthy. So, you know, there was so much, like, they were so confused. So they were trying to do the best that I think that they can, but I feel like they were so confused growing up. Like, what do they believe in? Where do they go? Like, they like the Western culture and they like the openness, but they also still felt so stifled by their own culture and the own things that they grew up with. We I feel like have much more open slate to create the future that we can for our kids. And I trust that our kids have an even better future in front of them.
Yeah, I was having a conversation with my son about money the other day and beliefs about money. And he said something like, well, you know, I'm already ahead of where you and dad were. Yeah. And he was meaning in his consciousness. And I was like, yes, that's right. That's the idea. That's what we want with each generation, that we can, you know,
exactly
start off, have a head start from where our parents were. Well, one more question related to motherhood before I want to talk some more about your work. And I ask all parents questions about parenthood and how it affects their work and their creativity. So it's not, I know sometimes people, interviewers especially, I've seen, will just only ask the women about their motherhood and their careers.
Right.
They won't ask the men questions about that. And I just want to let everybody know that I'm interested in the way that parenthood affects all creative people. Because if you're doing it right, it should. But with women, I know sometimes, and depending on what career you're in, there's an idea that, you know, your experience of motherhood can hold you back and be a stumbling block. But for me, even though it's incredibly time consuming to raise human beings, it's been an initiation for me, and it has deepened my soul in ways that, you know, probably wouldn't have been if I'd chosen not to have kids. And I don't want to in any way invalidate women that choose not to have kids or men that choose not to have kids by saying this, but it's just to say that I'm wondering how your experience as a mother has affected the person that you are and the work that you now are doing with people.
That is, again, such a great question. I'm loving these questions. I feel like these are such deeper conversations than the average conversations. Just like you said, everything. And I didn't really realize it so much with my first one, but when my second one was born, and you know, my first one was a C-section. My second one, I decided that I'm going to have a vaginal birth after C-section, and it was a successful one. And I remember walking to my room, and my husband was like, "Holy shit, you just gave birth to a human. It looks like you are ready to go play soccer out there." I had so much like energy inside of me. And I think there was something that changed inside me when I gave birth to my second one. And there was this moment where it was like, if I can do this, I can do fucking anything. I'm sorry. I don't know if you allow cussing, I can do anything. And I think something changed inside of me too. It kind of fueled me. And I'm not saying it in terms of like, I want to create a better world for my kids, and I want to like leave the world a better place. All of that is there. It's always there in the background. But I think it just changed me as a woman. It just allowed me to believe in myself more.
Yes, for me, it was a rite of passage. And like you said, especially number two and number three, because I sort of knew what I was doing more. And it was a different kind of process. And at the end of it, I was just like, I am a total badass. Wow. Right. You know?
Yeah. Until date, a lot of people ask me, what's the most badass thing you've ever done in your life? And I'm like, birthing my second one. Because everybody around me said, you can't have a C-section. You can't have a vaginal birth after a C-section. Like nobody believed in that. And like they were literally like people cheering and whooping in the room when he came out of me. And even my husband was like awestruck. It was the most amazing experience that I had. Yeah. And I think, you know, kudos to my husband too, because I think he believes in me more than I believe in myself. And he always created this environment, even after I gave birth to my kids. He was the one who told me, because my second one, though, you know, I felt like I could do anything. He was a very difficult child. He didn't really sleep at all for the first 3 years. So I was always tired, and he used to cry and scream all the time. And my husband used to say that you need to do something for yourself. You're going to get very depressed if you don't do something for yourself. And I had no inclination. And he said, listen, and he calls me by my nickname, Minnie. And he said, Minnie, till you do not have the fire in your belly, you're not going to do anything. So, you know, he he kept saying that to me, and he was like the fuel to the fire in my belly, which I kind of extinguished with the sleepless nights. But I kudos to him too for, you know, always encouraging me to follow my own path. Like even when I decided to make the shift from being a business mentor to a spiritual mentor, and I'm a manifester in human design, so I don't really tell people what I'm doing. I take decisions and then I tell them. So I'd already taken the decision, and that's when I went to him and I'm like, listen, I'm doing this, which means that we could have a little bit, like, you know, maybe a few slow months, right? We probably wouldn't have the same predictable revenue that I was generating before. And he was like, do whatever you want to do. Like, this is your life and I'll support you. And this is your, you're meant to be this person to do it. I don't know how I came to this topic, but I think, you know, my kids changed me. However, if I did not have the support of my husband, which many women back in India did not have when I was growing up, I don't think I would have been able to do what I'm doing today. So I think it was a combination of everything.
Well, that's really beautiful. And it, so, you know, I can tell that not only was the act of birth and motherhood a rite of passage, but just going through the experience with him gave him the opportunity to show you what he was made of and show you, you know, that support. And, you know, that's the beautiful thing about being in relationship. One of the beautiful things is that, you know, you go through these things together and then you have the opportunity, you get to see what each other's made of. And
yeah.
So that's really awesome. Well, I know that my listeners are always looking for ways to live their most creative lives and move past those stumbling blocks that we all encounter in the human experience. So I know that's part of what you deal with is, you know, helping people get past the inner critic and just getting past some of those kinds of issues that we all face. So anything that you have to say about that, I'd be interested to hear.
Of course, lots, since I feel like this is the new journey that I'm taking. But I think the work that I am so passionate about now is letting people believe in them so that they can never talk them out of possibility. They can never let anyone else or themselves talk themselves out of possibility. And I think that that's a process. That's the path to self-mastery. When you become so good at believing in your own genius that you never let anything, whether the circumstances, whether your, you know, your creative career has launched in the way that you wanted to, or whether a performance went as good as you wanted to, or did not go as good as you wanted to, you never let yourself talk yourself out of that big vision, big dream that you have. And I would love to say to people is that is so worth it to get on that path, to know yourself really well, to get out, like, you know, to get beyond that critic, get beyond the fear. That is so worth all the pain and all the uncomfortable feelings that you go through. You, when you decide that you're going to meet your future self, you're going to meet your higher self, you're going to meet your soul, you're going to have a rendezvous with your soul. You are entering the unknown. You're entering the dark night of the soul. There is no other way to say it. And there are some uncomfortable feelings. Maybe an ex would come out from the past. Maybe, you know, you'll have like a financial breakdown, or maybe a relationship breakdown, maybe even a health diagnosis. But getting past that is so, so worth it, because at the end of it, you really see your soul and you really see what you are made of. You kind of remember who you really are. So my advice to everybody is always go back to that path. Always go back, even if it's scary, even if, you know, your current circumstances are telling you that you can't do this, or you can't make a career out of it, or you can't make money out of it. Believe in possibility and believe in yourself, because we are divine, and, you know, we were made to create. I sincerely believe that we were made to be creative, and all of us are creative. So whatever you need to do in order to believe in that, whether it's meditation, whether it's a spiritual path, whether it's, you know, cutting off from the world and going in and, you know, staying in a wooden cabin for a week to completely disconnect and connect with yourself, do that, but always stay on that path of, you know, letting go of that character, being present in the current moment, and, facing the demons of your own self, it's so worth it.
Amen. I think that speaks, you spoke to one thing I hear from some of my listeners is just that they don't have time. They feel like everything else always gets in the way of the creativity that they want to express, even if it's just, you know, their hobby or something they're doing for personal fulfillment. But then I also hear from people pretty frequently that they want to like go for whatever their dream is in a bigger way, whether it's writing or, you know, being a craftsperson or whatever it is, but they are afraid to drag their family through financial uncertainty or to just, it feels too risky. It feels too risky to them. So those are two of the things I hear from my listeners.
Yeah. And it is. It is scary. It is risky. It is the unknown. You know, if one of the biggest lies that we've been told is that we can predict or we can control our future and our present, right? And a lot of people are so scared of that. We are scared of the unknown. We are literally scared of the unknown. And that's why, you know, like the past couple of years and during COVID, remember when COVID first hit, all the people who were super scared of the unknown were the ones who were hoarding on the toilet papers and the sanitizers, because that's the only way they could control. The fact is that we have zero control over anything because we're always in the present moment. Right? And the present moment is the unknown. Like you and I are sitting here, you don't know what's going to happen right the second. We don't know. Like my laptop could go off, a bomb could like, you know, bust through my ceiling right now. Anything could happen. But if you think about it, we are never in the present moment. We are always living either in the past, we're thinking about all the things that have gone wrong and all the things, even though we're not thinking about consciously about the time that we were on the playground and someone bullied us. But because we felt like a failure in that, we are always stuck, frozen in that moment because you're thinking about what a big failure you are. In some ways, you're still stuck in the past or you're always thinking in the future. We are never in the present moment. So to be in the present moment is being in the unknown. And if you're always going to be in the future, in the past, your future is going to be so predictable. Because you're in your past, you were scared. You felt like a failure. Maybe you felt doubt. You felt shame. You're being run by those past emotions. So you could literally pick up your past and put it in your future. It'll be very predictable, right? 10 years down the line, if you haven't gotten through that emotion when you felt like a failure, you will still feel like a failure. And that's why, you know, I meet all these successful people, 7-figure, 8-figure business owners. They're miserable. They're miserable, even though they're top of the game, they made so much money, they have so much fame, they're miserable in their heart because they haven't got rid of that shame, that guilt, that fear, those survival-based emotions that are so stored in your body. So to be in the present moment, which is where everything is happening, it's not happening in the future, it's not happening in the past, is to be in the unknown. And to be in the unknown is, as I see it, is to sit in terror. It's to sit with terror. One of the things, and I've spent a lot of time in the unknown. I've spent a lot of time like sitting with my terror. And one of the things that really helped me, and maybe this would help your people, is having a paradigm shift. Because when I was in the unknown, I felt like I was in a tomb. I felt like it was so scary. I was in a dark tomb and it was dark and I could not see the end. I could not see the light. I could not see where the tomb ended and I could come out and breathe fresh air. And the shift that was given to me in a meditation was, you're not in the tomb, you are in the womb. And it was such a beautiful shift for me because if you think of the tomb, it's dark, it's scary. It's the unknown. You don't know what's going to happen. You don't even know when you're going to come out. But when you think of yourself in the womb, it's still dark. It's still scary. It's still the unknown. You still don't know when you're going to come out or how you're going to come out. But suddenly you know that you're being nurtured here. And suddenly you know that you are in a void of possibilities. Right? So there's this like shift that happens. And for me, it was literally a physiological shift that happened in my body. And for months, I just kept every day, like kept repeating this to myself. I'm not in the tomb. I'm in the womb. I'm not in the tomb and I'm in the womb. So then I could really, and you know, think about the framework that I told you of being in the water and then being in air, in void. Your senses won't work there. And then you have to rely on your intuition. You have to rely, you have to be Vasilis and rely on that wooden doll to guide you out of that womb then. So yeah, it's scary. It's risky. But if you want a predictable future, then you can choose to stay there. But the people who are committed to having a future that they can create, literally, they can dip into that possibility and create what they want, are the ones who are committed to staying in the unknown.
Well, I think that's a really beautiful vision that was given to you, you know, from the tomb to the womb. And sometimes it's just really nice to have a very small thing like that, that we can use to, in the moments when those fears come up, we can apply our mindfulness with an idea like from the tomb to the womb. One that I've been using lately when I notice like one of those thought patterns that make you uncomfortable and it's really unpleasant and your brain keeps playing it for you anyway. When that one comes up lately, I've just been saying, stop, change, new song, change. But that I can see that being a good one too. You know, okay. It's the womb.
Yeah.
Can carry with them. I like to give, you know, actionable tips for people. So that's a good actionable tip, I think. And in a minute, we're going to get some more information about how people can work with you more. But I had one last little kind of fun question that I wanted to ask. So we know you've mentioned that you like to read and write. What are your creative outlets just as a human that you have fun doing? Maybe that you don't or do for public consumption, but just what are your creative outlets?
Yeah, I mean, writing is definitely one, reading too. And I write... I write publicly, but I also write privately. There's so many things that I don't share in public, especially like my poems and stuff. I don't share it that as much. Dance.
Mm.
That's something that I've not really shared. It is my dream that one day I could have like a dance video maybe, but especially Bollywood dance. I love dancing and my husband loves dancing. And sometimes we dance together. Sometimes I just dance with my kids and we usually have these dance parties. But that is such a creative outlet for me. I love dance. I love it.
I want to see a Bollywood reel for you and your husband and your kids dancing. That would be awesome.
Yeah. Maybe one of these days when we can orchestrate it and choreograph it. That's, I think, the difficult part. But it's been on our vision, both me and my husband, that we will have this huge Bollywood party. We wanted to do it for my husband's 40th birthday, but because of COVID and everything, we couldn't do it. But we have this in our mind, and maybe during the summer we'll do it, to have a Bollywood dance party, call a DJ, call like all our friends and family over and just dance our hearts out.
That sounds like a great idea. I'm going to be imagining your Bollywood party in my head. Well, it's been so awesome to talk with you today. I'm so glad and privileged that we have had this time together. And I know that my listeners would be interested in knowing if they want to just take a bite-sized step or a bigger step in working with you, what are the options that you have available right now?
Sure. I mean, I am still, creating a lot of other stuff. So I think the best place to kind of get a feel of what it looks like is to download my guided energy activation meditation and see that for yourself of how it looks like to be in the field of all possibilities and create your future you want. And then if you want more, if you want to learn more about the Path to Self Mastery framework, we run a workshop every month. There are more things that are going to come. And my vision is to make more things accessible, honestly, at all price points to people, because I really, my mission now, Carla, is to let more and more people really know that we are more powerful than we know and more unbounded than we think. And we have the power to harness into that potential in ourselves. It doesn't come from the outside. The answers don't come from the outside. We have it inside of us, and we can really take even those negative emotions and that, like, you know, dense emotions, and we can turn it into creative power. So I would say, watch out, get the meditation, get the activation. You will be added to my email list. I communicate very regularly there. And if there's anything else that you would like to experience, then there's a lot more coming.
Well, that's a beautiful message about empowerment and our own agency on earth. And I love that you have the free meditation, and I love a good meditation, and I love your meditations. I love to listen to your voice, and it's great energy. So I highly encourage everybody to go get that. I will put links to those in the show notes. I don't know if you want to spell out anything or tell us your Instagram handle or your website or anything like that.
Sure. So my Instagram is Deepshikha Sairam. That's the website too, deepshikhasairam.com. My website, unfortunately, is still not updated. I'm really slow on all these tech things. I'm like the worst person when it comes to tech. So we're still updating it. But the meditation link, if you could put it in the show notes, you can grab it from there. If not, go to my Instagram, download it from my bio, or just send me a message on Instagram and say infinite possibilities, and I'll send you the link.
That sounds great. And I will definitely put all those links in the show notes. Again, thank you so much for being with us. And I know everybody's going to be really glad to hear your message and glad to get to know you a little more. And I am wishing you all of the success and all of the blessings in your new line of work as a priestess and spiritual mentor.
Thank you so much. Thanks for facilitating this really deep conversation. This was really, it was honestly very different. I've never had such a beautiful experience on a podcast. I do want to say that. So I'm actually now looking forward to going back and listening to some of the past interviews, because I know that you must have asked some really deep questions there too. And thanks for giving me the opportunity to talk about my journey and about my path.
Well, it's fascinating. And let's do it again sometime.
Yes.
This episode of What Dreamers Do is sponsored by the online Appalachian Flatfooting and Clogging Academy, the only course of its kind and the most comprehensive step-by-step program available for dancers learning this style. I teach beginning and intermediate students the steps and skills they need to dance to traditional mountain music so that they can be confident, joyful dancers and improvisers. Unlike others who just teach the same handful of steps or who just teach routines, I give you not only a bountiful library of steps, but a framework for understanding how the steps fit together with the music. Learn more about the Academy and get started for free with my video tutorial, The Three Essential Steps for Appalachian Flatfooting and Clogging. Visit www.carlagover.com today. It's a holy fight.